Hello, this is Magnus Carter saying welcome to the Southwest Business Report. Anecdotally, businesses in the Southwest are finding it more difficult to win bank support for new startups and expansion ideas based on innovation. And it's certainly true that business lending under the government's Funding for Lending scheme fell by a third of £1 billion in the first quarter of 2013 nationally. We begin this report by talking to Matthew Lee, Managing Partner of Bishop Fleming Accountants, to get an overview of how the SMEs he deals with every day are feeling in the current climate.
The majority of clients and contacts we meet are reluctant to invest. They're very cautious at the moment and feel that we are now in what is probably the fifth or sixth year of a never-ending recession. Today's business environment is the environment that we're going to be in for the foreseeable future. There seems no magic wand that's going to come along and transform their economic fortunes. So they're all hunkering down and have a lack of desire to take any significant risks.
So does that mean that they're kind of assuming if they were to go to the bank and ask for money, the answer would be no?
That was the case certainly a couple of years ago. There was a general feeling that there's no point talking to them because they're only going to say no. I think that the message is slowly getting through that the banks are actually open for business, as they've said for some time, and certainly anecdotal evidence is that if you want a loan, you can get one. What we're seeing is a reluctance from people to actually go and ask because they're not that enthusiastic about expanding their businesses or doing anything, really. There's a general lack of business confidence, and when you get a lack of business confidence, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Because if we don't start investing in business, we're never going to get that growth going again.
That's right. But, I mean, the entrepreneurs see that there's nothing that the government's likely to do to stimulate any growth. There is a fear, now whether it's a real one or not, that something nasty is just around the corner, that the government will eventually have to stop fiddling around with cuts and start making some really significant ones, which will have a knock-on effect. And people are just nervous about what that might mean for their businesses.
Do you have any sympathy for the banks at the moment? You know, they do argue that they're in a bit of a cleft stick with the government, insisting on the one hand that they increase their capital holdings, but on the other hand that they lend more money. You know, if they increase their capital holdings, the argument goes, well, there isn't more money to lend.
I have got tremendous sympathy for the individuals on the ground who, in many ways, get a real kicking from their customers and from the press alike, which isn't wholly deserved. The people running the banks, instructing them in the way they do, I think have got something to answer for. But many of the issues we've got aren't purely related to the UK. You know, we've got all sorts of global economic problems. We've got major interdependence between the UK banks and all their foreign counterparts. And it's that interrelationship with the others that's driving a lot of the behaviours that we're seeing in this country.
There are, of course, many other potential sources of funding other than bank loans. Are SMEs perhaps a bit bewildered by the many different sources and many different approaches to finance?
The main issue with raising funding for the average SME is the strings that are attached to it. They've been used to an environment where they could go out, get a loan very easily without having to provide very much in the way of security, financial information, and have got it at a very competitive rate. What's happening now is that money's available, but quite often you're going to have to repay it over a shorter term than you did historically. You're going to have to put a bigger proportion of your own money in. The rates you're going to have to pay, whilst a lot lower than in real terms than what was previously the case, is going to be a higher multiple from base rate than has been the case in the past. And people are looking at it and saying, actually, that money is quite expensive. We've got to pay it back so quickly that we don't know whether the profits we're going to make from what we're investing it in are going to be sufficient to pay it back. I might as well just stand where I am. If I'm doing okay, let's not rock the boat.
But we're never going to get growth unless somebody puts their head over the parapet. What do we need to do, in your view, to encourage innovation again?
The main thing we need is a very strong steer from the government about what it proposes to do to resolve the budgetary deficit that we're currently running at. We've just seen announced yesterday cuts in government expenditure for 2015 of 2.4%. I have to say that is very feeble. That might go some way towards reducing the deficit, but they need to get on and do something fairly radical. The economy isn't going to grow sufficiently to produce enough tax revenues to pay back the debt that we've currently got. So you're going to have to cut spending, and you should be looking at targeting 15-20% cuts, not a couple of percent.
In your view, if that doesn't happen, business won't regain the confidence to drive growth forward?
No, because it thinks that we're just going to be in this position of slowly walking towards the cliff edge. We're just walking at a slower pace. We're still heading for it.
The Business Secretary, Vince Cable, of course, says the government is taking action and he'd like to see the banks doing more. He says that as a result of the banking crisis, we've got safer banks, but we've also, he admits, got banks that are not providing capital to good companies. He told me the collapse of Northern Rock and the subsequent difficulties for other banks has created a long, long shadow.
The banks these days are much, much more conservative in their lending, partly because they've chosen to be, because they're over, in a way, somewhere's overreacting to what happened before, partly because the regulators require them to hold more capital. So it is much more difficult to get a bank loan. What we are doing is providing guarantee schemes. My own department is setting up a business bank at the moment with $1 billion of government capital, and we're already looking at ways of actually getting money out to some of the new challenger banks.
It's a long process, though, isn't
it?
You said the other day the British Business Bank will not be doling out funds for at least another year.
We'll be doing it this year, but anyway, there is. And we're already supporting sort of non-bank financing. There are so-called peer-to-peer lending where kind of affluent people are actually lending money to businesses directly rather than going through the banking system. There's what's called asset finance, which is beginning to get off the ground. There are these new challenger banks like Aldermore and Handelsbanken, which are focusing on business. We're providing funding streams which are helping those, but you're quite right, it's a very long process and it is very difficult, and there isn't any overnight magic cure, unfortunately.
In the longer term, regional banks, everyone seems to be jumping on that bandwagon, from the Archbishop of Canterbury to Ed Miliband. It works in Germany. Would it work here?
I would love to see that. Unfortunately, we're not Germany. We're starting from a different place. We had regional banks, 15 years ago. We had all those building societies, if you remember. Many of them were...
Indeed.
It was a terrible act of vandalism, in my view, but they were demutualised. Some of them have just collapsed. Others have disappeared. And we've lost that regional network. I'd love to see it built up again. If we can find a way of supporting that through this British Business Bank, I'd love to be able to do it.
So a West of England bank might, for example, be based on the surplus branches Lloyds are being told to get rid of?
Yeah, that's one of the possibilities, and there are lots of different ways of dealing with the branches of Lloyds and RBS, where the European Commission have said under competition rules they have to be floated off. A regional approach is certainly one, but we've got to find somebody to do it. I mean, you've got to find a private bank that's willing to take this on, albeit with support from government.
You understand then the frustration of business who see these two effectively nationalised banks, RBS and Lloyds, and a government that seems incapable of directing them to let funds go out to business.
Well, I certainly understand the frustration, and every time I come to the West of England and I meet Chambers of Commerce and Federation of Small Business Groups, of course they're very voluble about this, and they're absolutely right to be. I can't sit in RBS and say that, you know, they've got to give X £100,000 to Bob the Builder in Exeter. I mean, that would be absolutely disastrous if we got into that. All we can do is to try to make sure that the government is there to, first of all, make the banks safe, and secondly, to make sure that we're able to give guarantees, to support, to reduce the risk, to support new competitive banking when it comes along, to support people who are operating outside the banking system, and rebuilding a banking system that was, I wouldn't say destroyed, but very, very badly damaged in the financial crisis is a long and difficult process.
In his annual speech to financiers in the City of London, Chancellor George Osborne said the government is ready to start selling its shares in Lloyds. The government is keen to show Britain's part-nationalised banks, Lloyds and RBS, are recovering from the 2008 financial crisis, and a profitable sale of part of its 39% stake in Lloyds would allow the government to claim at least partial success ahead of the next election in 2015. For South West Business News, Christopher Slade put it to Lloyds Bank Area Director David Beaumont that Lloyds is one of the banks SMEs most love to hate.
I hear that on the ground, but when I go out and seeing customers on a day-to-day basis, I hear a different story. At the end of the day, I can only talk about what Lloyds is doing, and we've grown our lending year on year for the last 3 years. Our lending is growth is net up by about 6% this year, so that's after overdrafts and loan repayments have gone through. And nationally, our lending is up 4%.
Are you saying that the moans are not not out there and that they don't exist?
I think the banking industry as a whole have got a responsibility to face off to small business customers and ensure that they understand how they can access finance. And I think we've got all got a big part to play in that. My job on the ground and the job of my relationship manager team is to ensure that that message is out there loud and clear.
Is the problem one of the message? Because a lot of people listening to this might be surprised to hear you saying that lending's up and, you know, it's all brilliant at Lloyds.
I can only talk about the facts that I can relate to, which is that Lloyds, our lending is positive. Net growth, which is a really important statistic. We're not talking about gross targets now, it's about net lending. To evidence that, over the last 3 years in Devon and Cornwall, and we're on target to exceed our lending in 2013 versus what we did in 2012, says, you know, we're doing our bit. Do we get it right all the time? Hey, you know, we have to work really hard at that. You know, we're really proud around the processes that we have in place. 8 out of 10 loans get agreed. We have a very robust appeals process, which we're very overt with our customers around. So if we've communicated a decision and the customer doesn't agree with that, we have an opportunity for an independent appeal, which is actually overseen by an external body. And yes, some of those do get overturned, and you know, lending's an art, not a science, so that's important. And what we have evidenced is that we've grown our core book in Q1, March to December, by £0.8 billion. Now, I can talk about examples. I could talk about a sawmill that we're just financing in Cornwall. I could talk about a retailer we've got in Exeter. I could talk about a microbrewery in Dartmoor, all of who have had access to funding through Funding for Lending Scheme. And there's one example from a hotel near Sulcombe, which actually was a non-customer that came to us for finance. They got a commercial loan already and they wanted to refurbish their hotel in order to make it more accessible. And we were able to help them. We were absolutely delighted to support them. We drew that loan down for them in January. Their occupancy, they've reported back to us, is now 90%. And their throughput of customers coming through the hotel is much better. So they're good examples, real life examples of what's happening on the ground.
Vince Cable, that we've spoken to on South West Business News, is very interested in the idea of a regional bank. Lloyds is having to sell some of its branches, if it can. That's proved difficult, as we know. Is that something, you may not back it, but is it a good idea?
Well, I think competition in banking is important.
Competition for you, wouldn't it?
I think competition in any industry is important. And, you know, you're referring to the Verdi sale of the branches that within Lloyds, which is a transaction that continues. I'm not qualified to speak in detail about that, but that continues, and that's 600 odd branches nationally, and that will provide, at the time when that's disposed of, a competitor brand in the high street, which I think is important.
Is there a place for a bank for the region, do you think?
That's difficult. I think there is a voice around that. One of my other responsibilities, I'm a non-executive director for South West Investment Group, which is a not-for-profit organisation providing gap funding, complementary loan finance to SMEs. And through that, I'm really passionate in my job around providing access to finance to customers. I represent Lloyds Bank in that capacity. And, you know, we're looking increasingly with our legacy funds to access more funds for finance across the region. So there's one example where an organisation, a body, is providing funding on a regional basis.
So to people in business hearing this, who don't share your view that it's incredibly optimistic, what do you say to them?
I'm not trying to paint a picture of high optimism. I'm just trying to make sure that we balance the noise and get the reality of what's happening on the ground. I think it's really important that we get the good news out there. I can only bring out the live examples, but I'm also honest and fair enough to say if we don't get it right, we've got to be very clear and understand. We've got to communicate when we're not able to help a customer. We're hopefully able to articulate to them the things that they can do in order to improve either their application or their opportunity or how they're going to move forward. Sometimes that means involving them with other bodies and agencies so they've got the support they need. And we've got examples where we've done that and we've reworked propositions and we've been then able to place them. So, as I said before, lending's an art, not a science, and we've got a real responsibility to work through a proposition with a customer, communicate very clearly if we're not able to help so they understand what they need to do next and then move it forward.
So perhaps to the SMEs that either you or Lloyds or whoever hasn't lent to, what are they doing wrong?
Well, I think, you know, in any stage of any economic cycle, you'll have businesses where it's not a viable proposition. And I don't think anyone would thank any bank in the high street to lend to an unviable proposition. At any stage of the cycle, even in boom times, there's reasons why you wouldn't lend to a particular business. But the danger is we use those stories as the ones as the major noise, and we don't talk about the good news stories. Because we're in danger, if we're not careful, of saying to businesses, don't go and talk to your bank, don't think about growing your business, don't think about investing in that piece of plant or machinery or premises, because actually you won't get there. Come and talk to your bank, present a proposition in a way that, you know, is credible and articulate, and we'll do everything we can to help that business proceed.
There are, as our contributors have pointed out, many other sources of funding for business ideas, apart from the banks. You can, for instance, enter the Dragon's Den. Peter Brill met three entrepreneurs who did just that, but eventually got the investment they needed elsewhere.
This is Peter Brill for South West Business Report, and I'm stood just south of the River Thames in London, in an achingly trendy area, but outside a rather unprepossessing warehouse. But despite its appearance, this building has helped shape the future of some of the UK's most innovative small businesses. Because this is where the BBC films Dragon's Den. But I'm not here to meet the dragons. Instead, I'm going to talk to three business owners who braved the den, but, regardless of the outcome, turned to the alternative funding sector to make their businesses a success. So, let's enter the den. So joining me first, Guy and Caroline Unwin from Planet Products. Now, James Kahn made you a very generous offer of £200,000, and yet you still turned to alternative funding. Caroline, why did you do that?
Because if you run your own business, you like to run your own business. And it became increasingly obvious that that wouldn't be the case when you get James Kahn or Duncan or any of them. You wouldn't be your own boss anymore, even though you would be the major shareholder. You need money for a company to grow, and the banks don't seem to realise that. And if they do lend you the money, they charge you huge amounts of interest.
So you found Clifton Asset Management, you found pension-led funding, and one of the key focuses was IP, intellectual property.
We'd got quite a lot of IP and thought, well, it'll protect us from copyists and things like that. But then it was put to us that it had a value where you could possibly raise money against it.
And how surprised were you when you got the valuation back? Because it was more than £165,000 of value in your business.
Yes, well, pleasantly surprised for obvious reasons. It enabled us to secure our pensions.
The beautiful thing about the pension funding is that actually you're increasing your pension at the same time as you are making the money available for the business.
Now joining me is Tony Curtis from Alago, who make heated gloves and based in the Southwest. Tony, you went into the den and sadly walked away. You did the walk of shame. How did you feel after that?
A mixture of anger and a mixture of frustration then. We kind of went to the Dragons, obviously, because we needed the money for manufacture. When that was kind of turned down, our options were quite limited. We'd approached banks. We even approached business lenders, but we were a startup business with a brand new product. So it was untested, so nobody wanted to know really. And then it occurred to me that we had this pot of money just sat there, and it wasn't doing anything. It was wasted, and in my head, you know, that was being spent on investing in other companies and growing them to make a return. And I thought, well, why can that be done in my business?
But how easy is it for innovative businesses like yours to get funding these days?
Oh, it's so tough. You know, there are places out there, you know, the iNets, you know, the TSB, the KTN, but they all come with provisos. You know, they all come with, you know, 50% of your own money had to be spent on it. And if you haven't got that to start with, you're going nowhere.
Howard Carter from Incognito, your mosquito repellent products actually attracted the Dragons because they made you an offer of £100,000, but you, in the end, decided to reject them instead looking at alternative funding.
We rejected the Dragons because they were too much of our company. The only other viable source for us was our pensions. Quite a number of people thought we were absolutely mad to invest our own pension. But for me, it was pretty much a no-brainer. Because here was this dead money that I couldn't use until I was sort of 65 at the earliest. But I had a very good product. Banks and other lenders, they only really want to lend money to sure-fired, almost guaranteed things. And that's why the Dragons, they offer you the full amount, but they want such large amounts of the company.
Now with me is Adam Taverner, chairman of Clifton Asset Management, who have been the funders of these guys. Adam, why is it that the alternative funding sector now seems to be so prevalent?
one of the most positive byproducts of a banking contraction and a current sclerotic flow of money from the mainstream banks to the SME sector is the emergence, hopefully permanently, of alternative routes to finance. So I regard it as a very healthy development, the emergence of the non-bank funding sector, not just ourselves, obviously, with pension-led funding, but organisations such as Funding Circle and Crowdcube are moving into that space, and very successfully so, and long may it continue. You have to have some sympathy with the banks because, to an extent, they are subject to a set of circumstances which some might say uncharitably was of their own making, but nonetheless, they are, like the rest of us, are having to deal with the circumstances as it is. Our experience, to the contrary, is that there are quite a number of deals which they would like to fund. They simply can't make the numbers stack up, and one of the largest growth areas of our own funding methodology is in collaboration with the banks, where they will come in and do their bit and we'll do our bit, and together the client gets the funding they require rather than simply trying to park it all in one place.
If you had one key message for SME owners, what would it be in terms of funding?
Have a credible business plan. Be prepared to back it. If that involves backing it yourself, you will give great comfort to those other people you're asking for backing. If you're not prepared to back your own business, the chances are that other people won't be either.
Finally, a word from Bristol's first elected mayor, another who welcomes the idea of a regional bank for the South West and wants to see the banks generally doing more to help South West businesses. George Ferguson is widely famous for his trademark red trousers. The day I met him, they'd been replaced by ones of an equally vivid green. He was celebrating the award of European Green Capital to the city. I spoke to the mayor about the role of the West Country as a hotbed of innovation and the difficulty of raising funds to drive that innovation. He believes the Green Capital status will make a real difference.
It's a great result, and I have to say I was pretty twitchy right to the announcement. We scored high, but we've got a long way to go. Copenhagen is next year's 2014 Green Capital. So in 2015, we've got a huge challenge to raise our game in order to justify this result. And I'm absolutely determined we do so.
What does it actually mean to Bristol? I mean, apart from being a feather in our cap, are there real benefits?
Oh, there are real benefits. And talking to Colin Skellett, who is chair of the LEP and of Wessex Water, he said this is fantastic news. It means millions of pounds of investment into Bristol, and I'm absolutely sure that's right. As you know, we've got a growing reputation as a high-tech energy hub, alternative energy, renewables and what have you. And I'm absolutely sure this is going to put us on a new European stage, because let's face up to it, there are still a lot of people in Europe that don't know enough about Bristol. This is a huge opportunity for us to market ourselves right across the pitch, not just about green issues.
When you opened the first Regional Growth Leader event, you said that Bristol is enabling a world-class centre of innovation. Is this part and parcel of it?
It is, absolutely. And that's why it's such a relief to me that we've got it, because I needed something that would give us a boost in this area. So I see it as part of the whole jigsaw that has to be put together that makes that great Bristol picture of the place to invest in. We're very fortunate that we do have a flying start over many of the other cities in the UK, not least in that people see a much firmer form of government in Bristol, and that came across certainly in the response from the jury.
So they like the fact that we've got a mayor.
Well, they did mention it once or twice, which is pleasing. I mean, I think that it's the mayoral system that matters, whether it's me or anybody else. It's just the fact that they are able to make a decision based on somebody saying they will deliver something when they know they will be there to deliver it. And that is, that's unusual. I mean, actually, I have to say the Green Capital process was kicked off by others. I stand on the shoulders of people who have put a hell of a lot of work into this, including Barbara Jank, who was leader of the council at the time when the process was kicked off.
Enabling innovation, which is what you talked about, does take money. Innovation's a risky business, isn't it? Have the banks, do you think, become too risk-averse to play a meaningful role in this?
Yeah, I think the banks have gone from the ridiculous to the sublime. And I think they've now gone from being far too risk-taking to being far too risk-averse. It's a real problem. I was talking to the voluntary sector the other day, and the voluntary sector is a really important sector. It is the third sector, who are now creating an awful lot of business and social activity within the city. And they're finding the biggest block on their activity is lack of access to finance, because the banks only bank on safe bankers, and actually that is not the way to do banking. Banking should be more creative than that. We certainly need to continue a conversation with the banks, and government needs to do more to prize lending out of the banks.
Are you a supporter of the idea of regional banks?
I'm definitely a supporter of regional finance, but I think the more we regionalise, the better. It's something that government has been very bad at. So we've not only got the most centralised government in Europe, we've also got the most centralised financial sector, I think. And while that's good for London, we must make quite sure there's much more trickle down than we are getting.
Of course, Lloyds TSB have been forced to dispose of a large number of their branches under competition rules. Do you agree that those branches, or some of them at least, could form the foundation of a regional network, you know, a Bank of the West of England?
Absolutely. I think Vince Cable has been very strong about the need to break down the banking system and the domination by very few, very powerful banks. So I absolutely do think that's so. I'm absolutely sure that we've got to get back to something that is a balance between old-fashioned safe banking and more imaginative, more creative banking. And I think the closer that banking is to the need, the better understanding it will have of that need, and we'll get less of the computer says no.
If you'd like to comment on this report, or if you have any suggestions for future reports, please contact us at info@southwestbusinessnews, all one word, .co.uk. This is Magnus Carter saying thanks for listening.